Welcome to Galactic Chat. I'm Alex, and joining me is Andrew McRae, author of the recently released Truck Song from 12th Planet Press, as well as some short stories, and he's also a creator of typewriter art. So firstly, Andrew, congratulations, of course, on the publication of Truck Song. How do you feel about it now that it's quite literally in the wild?
Hello, Alex, and hello, listeners. I am very excited that this book has finally been released and launched. It's been a long time in the pipeline, so yeah, it's really great that it's out there and people are actually reading it.
Good. So I understand Truck Song came out of a creative writing PhD. Have you graduated yet?
Yes, I am now officially a doctor.
Dr. McRae, congratulations. Dr. McRae. Did you go to your ceremony?
I did. I wore the floppy hat.
Wore the floppy hat. That was what I was going to ask.
Yeah, I love the floppy hat. I've got photos to prove it.
Excellent. And they did the bit where they have to, you have to find out in 50 words or fewer what your entire 3 years or more has been about?
Yes, exactly.
Was that the hardest part to write?
The hardest part was actually sitting there through about 3,000 undergraduate and higher education certificate handovers before they got to us. So it was great. It was the magical day. My parents came all the way down from Queensland for it, and of course they were delighted. So
very good.
Yes.
So if Truck Song, I presume, was the creative bit, does that mean you also had to write like an exegesis as well?
Yeah. So the way the creative writing PhD works is that basically the two pieces need to work together. Like the whole thing is a thesis. You submit it as a thesis, but there's a creative part and a scholarly part, mm-hmm. And the scholarly part basically has to support the creative part.
Yep.
And vice versa, I guess. And so basically it's done the same way as a research PhD would be, in that you have to pose a research question. So you have to frame your research in a certain way and set out the field that you're going to investigate.
Yep.
But the wonderful thing is you get to explore the question in creative writing.
Fantastic.
As well as through scholarly research.
So what question did you pose?
I was looking at the degradation of language in post-apocalyptic fiction was the main sort of element to it.
Yep.
So there's an experimental version of the book, which is available on the Truck Song website, trucksong.com.au.
And that will be in the show notes as well.
Yeah, cool. And the experimental version, I use a degraded form of language, what I call a degraded form of language,
mm-hmm.
like A Clockwork Orange or like Ridley Walker by Russell Hoban,
yep.
or indeed books like Trainspotting by Irvin Welsh, mm-hmm. or True History of the Kelly Gang by Peter yep. Carey. It's basically a dialect, a written dialect, a specialised grapholect, if you like.
Grapholect, that's going to be my word of the week.
It's a ripper. I like pulling that one out. I don't get to pull it out very often, so I'm very glad you asked.
Well, there you go, grapholect. So what makes you so interested in changes to language?
Well, what fascinates me about it, so Truck Song is a post-apocalyptic book. It's set after the collapse of the system of the world that we know and cherish in our comfortable middle-class lives here in suburban Australia. And so I was really interested in exploring the notion of how to amplify the effect, the post-apocalyptic effect, using the actual text on the page to mimic the breakdown, the social and cultural breakdown that happens in the wake of a catastrophic event.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of a way it's a tricky technique, if you like, to try and mirror that or represent that that social and cultural breakdown on the level of the surface of the text.
Yeah.
Which all sounds very academic, and actually it's kind of irrelevant to the printed published version of the book, because basically Alyssa at 12th Planet Press and I agreed very early on in our negotiations that the experimental language should go for this version of the book.
Right.
So the published version, I basically, after I've been working on this book for about 10 years or so. I first had the idea for it back in 2003, and I started work on the PhD in 2007, and
yep.
I finished the PhD in 2011, and I shopped it around in 2012, and then in 2012 I found a publisher, Alyssa at 12th Planet Press, and she, at which point she said, no, I think we basically totally need to rewrite this book if it's going to be publishable. And I actually agreed with her, and it was sort of a joint decision, actually.
So
that's a very long roundabout way of saying that the published version actually doesn't really go into that distorted language stuff very much, although it is through that process of rewriting it, it was really amazing how much of the world and the character's voice stayed the same, even though it's basically a completely different book. At the level of the sentence, like
sure.
I basically went through and rewrote every single sentence, putting it all in standard spelling.
Yeah.
And it was just astonishing to me how much of my character's voice remained the same.
Well, that's really interesting, since it sounds like from your early, experimentations, you're really looking at the idea of language as a symbol of civilization in so many different ways, and yet you're still able to convey the nature of a post-apocalyptic society even through language that we readily identify with and recognise.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's very cool.
And the other really interesting thing about it was this notion of voice, like how... Mm. How marks on a page or on a piece of paper or on a screen can evoke the sensation of a voice speaking in the reader's mind.
Mm-hmm.
That was a really intriguing side effect of this rewriting process is to realize just kind of how that voice that's kind of magically sits in between the characters on the page, the letters on the page, how that's evoked in a way, even when the actual marks on the page are quite different from my original, ended up being quite different from my original intention.
I have a friend who's interested in poetry and poetry's use of what she tells me are called speech acts. Which sounds sort of similar in some ways in terms of thinking about how, as you say, marks on a page actually interact with a reader or, I guess, a speaker sometimes, and that sort of... Because I've never really thought about the fact that you're looking just at marks on a page and yet you're constructing entire worlds and entire characters in your head out of those, so...
Yeah, it's quite a magical process.
Mm.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess that's on the level of language, I mean that was kind of my impetus for the project, the PhD project, exploring this notion of degraded language and voice in a text.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, like any major piece of research, like it meandered in different ways, and it changed its focus as I went along.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in the end, what it ended up being about more than the degradation of language is exploring the idea of recursive history, the eternal return, which is a theme that's played out very strongly in a lot of post-apocalyptic fiction, that idea that history is doomed to repeat itself.
Mm.
So that comes out in books like Canticle for Leibovitz, which was... by Walter M. Miller, which is one of the books that I looked at in my exegesis, as well as Ridley Walker by Russell Hoban.
Mm.
So basically, in these post-apocalyptic worlds, the characters are slowly piecing together what happened with the disaster.
Yep.
And that process of trying to find out what happened and trying to find out where they came from and what caused this massive disruption in their world ends up bringing about the same disruption again. So their quest for knowledge in Ridley Walker, it's the quest for the ink to put together the ingredients for gunpowder.
Right. Yeah. That reminds me, I'm sure there's a James Tiptree Jr. story that's something along those lines.
Okay.
Maybe Always
Walking
Home
or something
like that.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it's actually called now. But, yeah, it's that same sort of going around in circles and then finding that the thing you're trying to find out is the thing that the man who walked home. Is what it was, and yeah, it ends up being that cyclical kind of idea. So, from my perspective, from being a complete outsider, hearing that you've gone in to do a creative PhD, you've produced a novel out of it, you've sold it, and people are reading it. So that, to me, as a kind of marker of success, would suggest that you've succeeded and met your criteria. Do you think that you have? Have you met your own success criteria? Was it worth doing the PhD?
That's a really interesting question. it's a really onerous task undertaking any kind of 3 or 4 year long research project, no matter what anyone tells you, no matter what, no matter, you know, how interesting the subject matter, no matter how passionate you are about it, it is a tough slog.
Yeah.
Well, I found it to be. That was my experience anyway. Others may have different experiences. I think, I'm delighted that I've got the book out of it. And to be quite honest, I don't think I ever would have finished the book if I didn't have the structure of the PhD program.
Yep.
Was it a success? I think the interesting thing about the PhD is that both... I mean, I find like both parts of the thesis tended to pull against each other. So I found that in some ways the critical component was working against the creative component and vice versa. Although there's creativity inherent in criticism and there's criticism inherent in creativity, I find in practice they're kind of at opposing ends of the spectrum, and so that tension never quite went away for me, and I sort of feel like what I produced was a flawed piece of scholarship and an unpublishable novel.
One
terribly...
half of which has been redeemed.
Well, you know, after a lengthy rewriting process. So, yeah, it was a success in that it was finished. I mean, there's that old adage of there's only two kinds of PhD projects, those that are finished and those that are not.
Yes.
So I was very pleased to be in the first category.
Yeah.
Yeah, but look, it's an interesting way to write a novel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting way to conduct academic research as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's its own peculiar thing. But you know, the book wouldn't be here. There's no way the book would be here if it wasn't for that. So I mean, it was a success. And you know, I get to call myself Dr. McRae when I fly.
There's
now,
no
so.
Lose. There's nothing bad if you come out of it with a floppy hat and
that's it.
Your name. Do you feel like you learnt anything about, I guess, yourself as a writer or projects or ideas that you want to explore further?
I want to stay as far away from post-apocalyptic fiction as I possibly can. I learned how to finish a project, which I'd never done before. Like, this is my first novel-length piece of work.
Yep.
So, you know, that was a huge thing, learning and proving to myself that I could finish a novel and learning how to write a novel, because I'd really only written short stories before, and it's quite a different art form.
Yeah.
Sustaining a story over a longer span.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I learned a lot, but yeah, I've still got a lot to learn, and it's not going to be in post-apocalyptic fiction, that's for sure.
Well, if it's only served to, I guess, get rid of one avenue for you, then that's worth it as well.
Exactly.
So you mentioned your short stories, and I understand you've actually written short stories in this same sort of setting, the post-apocalyptic setting of Truck Song, before, so you've clearly been mulling over these ideas for quite a while then.
Yeah, since 2002, the first, 2003, the first short story was called Truck Dreamin', and that appeared in Cat Sparks' ripping Agog, Ripping Reeds in 2004.
Yeah.
And that was sort of the impetus for the story that then mutated into Truck Song. It's the same characters.
Yep.
But, yeah, it did end up being the novel's quite a lot different to the short story.
Mm-hmm.
The short story was written as a 12,500-word novella. I produced it in a white-hot fury of creative intensity over about 2 days.
Fantastic.
On the manual typewriter. It was actually one of the very few experiences I've had in writing where I actually like experienced true release from my physical body in a way that, I mean, I find writing very, you know, I find it to be a tough slog, but that story just came out, just slid out of me like it was made of Vaseline. and
on a manual typewriter.
And on a manual typewriter, that was back in the typewriter days, or my typewriter days. I've since sort of moved away from the typewriters a little bit. I'm still attracted to them, but I don't use them in my work so much these days, just because there's so much damn work involved.
Indeed.
And computers are much, much easier for editing words once you've got them on the page.
And you don't need to source ribbons either.
Yeah, well, that's right. Although you'd be surprised how easy it is to source typewriter ribbons. They're still very big in the developing world, in India and China. So.
Yep.
Actually surprisingly easy and cheap to get typewriter ribbons. You wouldn't believe it, would you?
No.
What's harder is finding a typewriter repairman.
Ah, yes. Once that mainstay of suburban Australia.
Exactly. Exactly.
And it's a bit difficult to ship your typewriter to get fixed in India or China, I would imagine.
They're very heavy and not conducive to easy shipping.
No. So rather than me making a hash of trying to describe Truck Song, you've already mentioned about it being post-apocalyptic. How do you describe Truck Song when you tell people, you know, that random person comes up to you at the party, so tell me about your novel?
What do
you say?
Well, I probably got off on the wrong foot with this discussion by starting with the academic stuff, because really it's actually the published book is really not an academic heady piece of work. The one sentence description is, it's basically a story of lost love, cyborg trucks, and the search for meaning in a post-apocalyptic Australian landscape.
That's nice. Was that in your graduation description?
Look, I can't remember. It probably was in some form or another. That
little good, and it's
little tagline's been kicking around. So actually, it's really funny. The people the few people who have read the book already have sort of come back to me and said, I'm really surprised that I like this book, because I didn't think, you know, it's called Truck Song, it's post-apocalyptic, and I didn't think I would like, the idea of cyborg trucks. And, you know, I thought the post-apocalypse might be a bit too dark and sinister, but they've come back to me and they've said that actually it's really readable and it's an engaging story. So that's as a writer, that's just really gratifying to hear, because that's exactly what I was going for. I really wanted to make it an entertaining and gripping read, which I hope it is. I mean, yeah.
Yep. So the idea of the cyborg trucks, you call them the Brumbies, in the novel, is just this most magnificently Australian idea, with both a wild and feral animals going around rampaging around the countryside, mixed quite literally with the monster road trains that just seem to dominate outback Australia. So it's a brilliant concept, and I'm kind of wondering how on earth you came up with the idea of cyborg trucks.
It's in a really Australian book, and you know, right from the almost archaic Australianisms of the protagonist's voice through to the road train trucks in the outback. I was a real aficionado when I was growing up in Toowoomba in the 70s and early 80s. Of the genre of the trucking movie.
Oh, right.
I don't know if you're familiar with any of these, Alex, but...
I've seen maybe one or two, not that many.
So, you know, we're talking about Smokey and the Bandit. we're talking about Convoy. We're talking about White Line Fever. So these movies always seem to be on the old black and white TV at my parents' house in Toowoomba in regional Queensland every Friday or Saturday night. And I just, there's just something about them that really, like, sparked my imagination. And and thinking about these old trucking movies, they're kind of like a cheesy 1970s take on the Western genre.
Yeah, I can see that.
They're basically, the story in all of them is fairly similar, right? So there's a flawed but ethical protagonist who is an independent trucking operator, and he comes up against the forces of corrupt trucking companies and the traffic cops as well. So already you can see, like, that's a real kind of cyberpunk film noir scenario. So it just kind of grew out of that, and then I started thinking, well, what if the trucks, you know, like we're really not far away from seeing autonomous vehicles on our roads now. And so then I started to think about, well, what happens to the products of technological society after an apocalypse? What happens to the self-aware products of technological society after an apocalypse?
Yeah.
And so I started to think, well, these things are going to be, they're going to be looking for ways to heal themselves, repair themselves, and also to reproduce.
Yes.
So that's another dimension to the truck and life in Truck Song, is that trucks they like sex.
It's possibly the most scarring image.
There's a very raunchy truck sex scene in the book. I don't want to give too much away. Yeah. My mum didn't say anything about it when she read the book, but
I'm not sure if that's a good sign or a bad sign.
So, and as soon as you've got sexual reproduction in the mix, then you just opened up to all this wonderful stuff. Like, you know, obviously the trucks are going to be competing for the best mates. They're going to be evolving all of this, these crazy sound systems to ward off competitors. They're going to be covering themselves in fantastic bling and decals and flashing lights to try and attract, to make themselves more attractive. and of course in this process they're developing their relationship with the human riders as well. So in the world of the book, the human riders trade software patches with the cyborg trucks, which are kind of like truck narcotics, and in return the trucks have evolved these synthetic alkaloid manufacturing devices that allow them to produce narcotics for humans as well. So there's this kind of symbiotic relationship where the most powerful trucks have got the best drugs to attract the riders with the best patches, the best software patches. So this is quite elaborate kind of culture evolved from that germ of the 1970s trucking movie and me sitting in my parents' house in 1977 and listening to the mournful sound of the prime movers as they ground up and down the mountain range in Toowoomba.
Indeed. So it's White Line Fever meets the Terminator.
Exactly. With some Mad Max in there.
Oh, of course.
With Mad Max 2.
Yeah. So your main protagonist is a fairly young character. Was that a deliberate choice to go with a younger voice?
It just kind of happened. And looking back at the original short story in Ripping Reeds, the character is actually an old man in that story, recounting his younger days. So John Ra, the main character in Truck Song, is about 15, and I'm not too sure why he just came out that way. I think that might be my emotional age. could have something to do with it.
pretty but good it, age. In some ways, it is a sort of coming of age or exploratory story. So
it is, and that was actually quite a conscious thing in the end to make it, you know, like a Huckleberry Finn type Bildungsroman of the classic coming of age story and finding your place in the world and that being amplified by the fact that the world is completely broken and shattered and, you know, there's really no place for anyone. So
that note, in your head, do you know what caused this apocalypse? Because I don't think it's particularly clear in the novel, and there's hints. So do you know?
I deliberately didn't make it anything specific because basically what I wanted to explore is this idea of system breakdown. So it's not actually one thing. It's like a whole cascading series of catastrophic disasters that have basically broken the system of the world. Yep. I mean, it's environmental collapse basically.
Mm.
Yeah, it's the kind of it's capitalism eating itself.
Yeah.
Is the kind of short answer.
Cool.
But I did want to leave it deliberately vague. Like I love the nuclear apocalypse, the atomic apocalypse of the 1980s.
Yeah.
But I wanted to leave it deliberately vague.
Cool. So now I hear that you had launches for Truck Song in both Brisbane and Melbourne, and that they were far from your standard kind of rock up, have a drink, and listen to a speech book launch affair. So what did you do and why did you do it?
Well, the other thing to say about Truck Song and my kind of creative life is I'm a musician as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd written a soundtrack to go along with the book, which is kind of an odd thing to do for a writer, I guess. I mean,
away from writing. How can you afford it?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting question. I'm not the world's most prolific writer, and that's probably why, because I keep letting myself get distracted by shiny, interesting new projects. And I got about halfway through this soundtrack album, and I realized that there's a lot more to writing and recording your own soundtrack album than I initially thought when I set out on the journey.
How hard can it be?
It's just sitting in front of a computer with the keyboard and the guitar there. Yeah, no problems.
Simple.
So anyway, I produced this musical development to try and, I guess, as a way of kind of capturing some of the emotional tone of the novel, because music's quite a big part of the book as well, in that the trucks are very musical.
Yep.
They have massive sound systems and with which they do battle, and they kind of mix and they download different samples and mix them together in these elaborate sound system battles.
Fantastic.
So for the launches, I kind of wanted to incorporate some of that musical dimension as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the one I had in Melbourne a couple of weeks ago was just fantastic. It was a really great night. I play in a band called The Television Sky. It's an instrumental post-rock band.
Nice.
And we've been working with these guys called Dr. Projectionists, right, who are these two quite crazy individuals who I met fairly randomly through a friend, and so we've been collaborating with them through The Television Sky for a little while now, and I really wanted to get them involved with the launch.
Mm.
So they had they were doing some experimental projections, and I had some musician friends who were on hand to do some music, and we did a spontaneous kind of improvised thing where Jim and Tom, the musicians, played some music as I read a small part of the book. And
right,
yeah, that was just amazing. That was one of those kind of rare experiences in my life as a musician and as a creative person as well, where you just kind of, there was just something really magical that happened in the moment, and the three of us just looked at each other. I uttered about three words, and they played a couple of notes, and we were just off. We were, you know, really in sync, And yeah, that was really good. I should have recorded it for posterity, but some footage may emerge.
There's something nice about it being ephemeral, though.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. And it was the Melbourne launch was a really special night. There was lots of friends there, and I wanted to do something different. I didn't want to have your standard book launch in a bookshop. Not that there's anything wrong with those sort of book launches, but I wanted to do something a bit more interesting for my first one.
Yep. Do you think this is the sort of path that indie publishing in particular should be considering more into the future? Like, do you think it works for less experimental novels?
Yeah, look, I mean, that was one of the reasons why I was so delighted to go with an indie publisher for this one, because I realised, you know, I was very realistic about the book's kind of mainstream commercial potential. I don't want to talk it down because I think it does have potential, and I'm really hoping it'll find its readership. But working with an indie publisher just gives you a lot more leeway.
Yeah.
To do these kinds of things. Although, I mean, that said, a commercial publisher wouldn't have any problem with you doing those extra things either. But it just seemed to work really well for this project, mm-hmm. Because I had the music as well. It might not suit every book, and it might not suit every writer. But for me, and again, this kind of ties into the indie publishing angle as well. It was just a really great night to celebrate community. Like, I hadn't, you know, there were lots of my friends from the speculative fiction community there who I hadn't seen for ages. Lots of people there who had read different versions of the book over the years, and you know, it's kind of a myth that these books pop spontaneously into the world, you know, out of the creative genius of an individual. I mean, there's so much of other people's ideas in Truck Song. I mean, obviously I'm responsible for all of the mistakes. and the truck sex was totally my idea.
Sure.
But yeah, it was just a great opportunity to celebrate, you know, all the help I'd had along the way.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like it. It sounds like it was a fantastic evening. So
yeah, it was really cool. It was really cool.
So you said earlier that you've got no intentions of going back to the post-apocalyptic scene.
Yeah, that might have been a big glib.
Do you have other plans for novels or short stories percolating in your head at the moment?
Yeah, I'm working on another novel at the moment that's very different to Truck Song. But I've also kind of hatched this crazy idea with the graphic artist who did the cover design.
All right.
And who built the website for me. And seriously, do check out the website, because it is gobsmackingly good. I had nothing to do with it. And as a fairly objective, I'm not objective at all. But it's a good website. Anyway, Ken is an amazingly talented graphic designer, and so he and I are talking about collaborating on some kind of graphic project.
Nice.
For Truck Song. I don't know what shape that will take yet, but we just need to find ways of getting it funded, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So graphic novel or series of comics, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows?
That's very exciting.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Andy, for chatting to me. I hope... So you've mentioned that a few people have commented to you about having read Truck Song and having enjoyed it. Have you had any negative reactions yet?
I have not had any negative reactions.
Excellent.
And I've been deliberately telling people that if they don't like the book, I don't need to hear about it.
Very sensible.
But, you know, look, obviously not everyone's going to like it. It's like anything.
Sure.
I'm prepared for negative feedback. I tell myself I'm prepared for negative feedback.
Of course.
I'm probably not, really. But, but yeah, you know, that's just the excitement. It's just part of the excitement of putting something out into the world.
Yep. Excellent. Well, again, thank you very much for talking to us. If you are listening and are interested in looking at Truck Song, we'll have a link to the website, which I am objective and I can agree it is a spectacular website. And we'll also have a link to the 12th Planet Press site so that you can buy your own copy and marvel at the front cover as well as the contents. So thank you very much, Andy.
Thanks for having me, Alex.